Welcome to Life Quest, a program that directs you to subjects and books that will make a difference in your life. A program that will make you think and strengthen your journey of faith in the 21st century. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. Today on Life Quest, I'm talking with Rabbi Danya Ruttenberg. She's written a book called Nurture the Wow: Finding Spirituality in the Frustration, Boredom, Tears, Poop, Desperation, Wonder, and Radical Amazement of Parenting. She was named one of the 10 rabbis to watch by Newsweek magazine. And as I said, she's an author. And Rabbi Ruttenberg, welcome to LifeQuest.
Thank you so much for having me.
Why did you write this book at this time?
When my first son was born, he's now 7, the fastest transformation I've ever been through. You know, my heart burst open in a way that I hadn't expected. And like I walked into this whole other room with a whole other set of questions and challenges and ways of thinking about being a person in the body and ways of thinking about how I manage, you know, my son's tantrums and my own tantrums and hard feelings and complexity. And I felt like there was a gap between myself and the spiritual tradition that had nourished me for so long. I was already a rabbi when my first son was born.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, you know, like on the one hand, things were teaching for me in this profound, powerful way. And sure, I saw that in my tradition and in the other traditions that I've studied, I've been a great lay scholar of Christianity, of Islam, of Buddhism. Many other spiritual traditions also had a lot to say about dealing with hard feelings, about feeling powerful, about feeling powerless,
mm-hmm.
About selfhood and lack of selfhood. So on the one hand, I saw all of these ways that I could be nourished through this hard, new, powerful, amazing work of being a parent, by my own tradition and through other ideas. And on the other hand, there was this gap. You know, most theologians throughout history have not been moms.
Yes.
And so the people who have been doing the work of raising kids,
mm-hmm.
Have been transformed in this powerful way, but it hasn't necessarily informed the way we think about or talk about spirituality, God, prayer. And so I really, you know, I was full of all of these questions, and I started working on the book
when
my oldest son was a couple of years old, because I had these questions for myself.
In your introduction, that's one of the things that you say. What if parenting were considered a spiritual practice in its own right? Now, I did a little survey amongst the various parents that are in the same building as I am, and they all said the same thing. Well, we've not quite reached that status of parenting yet. So does that surprise you?
No. Most of the parents I know, and, you know, myself included, I'm you know, sort of muddling my way through this as much as anybody.
Yeah.
But if you think of a spiritual practice as something that you do repeatedly, and if you do it with the right intention, it changes how you think about yourself, your relationship, your place in the world, and, mm-hmm. you know, potentially your relationship with God, right? So, you know, people talk about running as a spiritual practice, or painting, or walks in nature, or prayer, or meditation, or, you know, for some people, yoga. Parenting is a thing that you do repeatedly, and I really believe if you do it with the right lens, it can transform you in powerful and important ways. So this book is supposed to be a window to open that for people.
Sure. And one of the things that jumped out, I have 4 daughters, and one of the things that jumped out at me was you would describe in detail problems you were having with one of your children, and you know, he seemed to be having a tantrum. And through it all, you stumbled, is the way you describe it, you stumbled through this and in essence said to him, what are you going through? You're frustrated, you're disappointed. Now, he was a little kid when you were trying to do it this way, but somehow that sent a message to him. And what was that message?
You know, I think we often unconsciously think of ourselves as the star of the play and everybody else is a supporting character.
Right.
And those moments when, you know, we all just want to be seen. We all want somebody to just see us for who we are with all of our gorgeousness and talent and our longings and our pain. And kids, I think even more so, and I think kids feel very acutely when they're not being seen. You know, when we regard them as sort of the object that's in the way of us getting out of the house or whatever needs to happen. And when they really are seen, in that moment when I was able to look at my kid and say, what are you going through? Like, where are you? It just popped open something in how I was engaging with him.
Yes.
And even the words coming out of my mouth were the same words I would have used, you know, 2 minutes earlier. You know, I think kids know immediately when you're seeing them and how they respond to you changes.
I have a 17-year-old at home, and it's she's the yeah I know it's a, she's the youngest, and I thought it was all great when I had my first child and I had it figured out, but you know they're all different. But I noticed that at one point a couple of years ago, and there had been some trauma in the family we had these shouting matches, and now I realized, wait a minute, it was after reading your book, not so much of that is happening. Why? What changed? And I realized that I was, first of all, needing to choose which battles. And secondly, I was talking to her more about how she felt and what this meant to her rather than the symptoms of whatever was happening. Now, you really extrapolate that to all of our relationships, because you talk about the Ten Commandments and how we talk about our duty to God and our duty to our fellow human beings and the Sabbath and that sort of thing. But how we treat one another and get through what's really bothering them is going to change the dynamic.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, the Jewish philosopher Martin Buber talks about I vow. It's a relationship where if it's two people who really make an effort to really see one another, right? To see the other as really created in the divine image. And this for Buber is a model of the human God
yes.
relationship. And it just, you know, I come back to it again and again and again, practically every day of my life, that when I'm able to really see the holy spark in my kids,
yes,
it changes my parenting.
The whole beginning concept based on the title of your book, Nurture the Wow, is that as children develop from a very early age, they're just so amazed and excited about things, about feel and touch and taste and learning and that sort of thing. And I thought about that, the amazement, the imagination that comes with our children. And I called up my oldest daughter, who's 40-something, and I said, do you remember when you were 3 or 4 years old, I'd be at a sitting in a recliner with my feet up reading a book, and she would put doll clothes on my feet, and then I would have to move them one way or another as yes and no as she talked to them, you know, and ask questions. And she was so delighted that I remembered that. But it showed me this amazement and this imagination that children have, and we need to resonate with that more, don't we?
We do. And, you know, I think most of us adults have had the wonder squashed out of us at some point, either by family members or the education system that we were in or whatever, or just the culture in which we live. And children, you know, they come to the world with fresh eyes, with what, you know, radical amazement is the term that I draw from Jewish philosophy to come to, that wow. And they can, I mean, not only do we need to work to not squash their sense of wonder so that they can hopefully grow to be people who really see the exquisiteness of the trees and the ants and the bubbles and everything. But if we hang around our kids with the right attitude, they can teach us how to reclaim that sense of wonder for ourselves.
Yeah. I like that. I really appreciate in your book, and folks, if you've just tuned in, and the book is called Nurture the Wow, Finding Spirituality in Parenting. And you describe in great detail, you know, the kids were spilling things. They were driving you nuts. And you didn't know what to do next. And all of a sudden, one of your children says, "Mommy, sing to me." And it changed the whole dynamic. And it you say later, it regrounded you in your relationship with the kids, right?
Yes, absolutely. You know, kids are constantly looking for us. And even when they're doing this complicated dance of, you know, trying to assert their independence and trying to figure out where the lines are and all of that, you know, they still want us. They still need us. They, you know, the love that we offer our kids is like oxygen to them. And the song that in that story that, you know, my kids were, it was the end of a long day, everybody was fried, and so everybody's being a little grumpy around dinner time. And the song that my son asked me to sing, just, you know, it's like they know how to play me like a jukebox sometimes. It's Dayenu, which is a song from the Passover Seder.
Yes.
That goes through all of the ways that God saved the Israelites in the book of Exodus, right? And so it's basically like at any stage, it would have been enough, right? It would have been enough if you had split the sea. It would have been enough if you had brought us over dry land. It would have been enough if you had given us manna. And, you know, it was such a powerful moment because at that moment, he reminded me that his dinner, where everybody's grumpy and nobody's quite getting what they need and all of that, is already more than enough. Right? We already have what we need.
You also point out that often how we do parenting is down deep a reflection of maybe things that happened when we were young or how we were parented. And you give an illustration of your friend Melanie, who has a teenage daughter, and she has this temptation when she comes dressed with something too short or too low and says and wants to criticize her about that, and then realizes that often she's reflecting on things that happened when she was that age. We do become our parents sometimes.
Quite.
Or always. It's sometimes hard for us to recognize this until we end up quoting our parents and realize, oh boy, where did that come from? And then we realize how parenting goes to the third and fourth generation sometimes.
Yeah.
You referenced the book of Job in the middle of your book and what was happening to him and his relationship with God. How does that tie into your whole parenting concept?
Well, so that's the chapter about power and powerlessness.
Yes.
And I think that's the right place to start bringing in Job. You know, we have so much power over our children in a lot of ways, right? We decide not only what kind of school environment they're going to be in and what kind of rules they need to abide with and, you know, whether they're wearing sneakers or rain boots today, depending on, because we check the forecast. I mean, you know, all these little ways and big ways that we have power over them. And we have power over how they see the world and whether they grow up feeling loved and secure or not. You know, so many ways. But ultimately, we can't control it all. And I think a lot of parents, myself included, struggle with this on a deep existential level. Like, we can't prevent our children from suffering. We can't necessarily keep them from getting sick. We can't stave off the really hard, scary stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the end of the book of Job, God comes to Job in the whirlwind and says, I know you really would like the guidebook to know how all of this works, but you didn't create the world. You did not set the stars in the firmament. You don't know how it all works. You have to be able to let go and know that, you know, some of this is just out of your hands.
Yeah.
And you have to be okay with that.
And then you reference a little later the book of Genesis, where it says God created human beings in the divine image. And I liked your linkage there to say, look, when we sing to our children, when we talk to them, we're really reaching out to the divinity within them as God created. And that's a little hard to see sometimes when we look at our children, and we often don't see it in ourselves when we look in the mirror.
Right. And I think, it's a powerful connection. I think a lot of times, it's easier to start sometimes seeing the divine spark in our kids, right? I mean, it's probable that these little people have come into our lives with these, beautiful blinking eyes and, sometimes their tantrums and sleepiness and everything. But there's just this profound holiness to our kids. I think if we can learn to speak to and through that holiness and to the way that God is in and with them, maybe it'll be easier for us to internalize for ourselves that, if it's true of them, it's also true of us.
And you conclude that section by saying, I want to teach my children about awe, praise, thanks, and how to ask for help. And you're using the resources from within your faith tradition. Then you go into prayer and how that your relationship to prayer has kind of evolved. And it's a lot less structured with pre-planned prayers. And it's something else. Could you explain that a little?
So, I showed a draft of that chapter to a friend who is Methodist, and she kind of laughed and said, this idea of spontaneous prayer is not nearly so strange to us as it is to you guys.
Yes.
this isn't so radical from my point of view.
Yeah.
Definitely in Judaism, there's a sense of prayer is, there's a fixed liturgy. There are certain things you say at certain times. And sort of inside the chaos of parenting, I found that I became more and more drawn to spontaneous prayer and to just reaching out and, say, help me when I didn't feel like I had all the resources in my own hand at a particular moment. Or thank you, or, just singing, a sort of hallelujah into the baby's ear, whatever it is.
Right.
I think there are ways, obviously we can connect to God at any point in any moment. But to me, being a little more intentional about taking on a practice of spontaneous prayer and doing it not as something that's happening when my children are someplace else, which again, Judaism is very sort of like, solitary, meditative in the way it thinks about prayer. But that, whispering something into my child's ear is a way, if they're created in the divine image, if they have the divine spark in them, then I can access God through them as much as I can through the other room. So it's not, I'm not just praying around my children, but, through and with them.
What do you want your readers to take away from your book?
I want them to know that if you go deep down far enough into the love, that there is the gateway to God, the gateway to the holy. And that if you go deep enough into your parenting, into the hard parts, into the crazy-making parts, into the exhaustion and the frustration, as well as sort of the wonder and the giggles and the play and the joy, if you let yourself go far enough into your parenting, it can take you everywhere you need to go.
The book is Nurture the Wow. It's written by Rabbi Dania Ruttenberg, and it is Flatiron Books Press. Where can our listeners get a copy of your book?
Anywhere that, certainly anywhere books are sold online, and I know Barnes & Noble and a lot of independent bookstores carry it as well.
Rabbi, thank you for being with us on LifeQuest.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Thanks for listening to LifeQuest today. If you have questions or comments, you may send them to lifequest@lifetalk.net. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. This program comes to you from studios in the Meadowglade Church, Battleground, Washington.